Good evening.
Let me show you what I mean. You don't mind if I borrow your neck for a moment, do you?
Oh, if it's not for long.
Why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Which one of you did it? Which one of you killed my dog?
Why are they doing this? Why are they doing this?
We all go a little mad sometimes.
Good evening, and welcome to another supplemental episode of the Alfred Hitchcock Podcast. I am your host, Brandon Shematella. And in this episode, we provide two special features for you. The first is the radio adaptation of The Lodger, which was presented on July 22, 1940, for a radio show called Forecast. This summary that I'm about to read to you comes from a website called escapesuspense.com and can be found at escape-suspense.com. And they talk about the production and how this radio drama came to be. First appearing on a CBS program called Forecast, which presented the pilot episodes of new radio shows, Forecast aired The Lodger on July 22, 1940. The radio play was based on the novel by Marie Belloc Lowndes, as well as many other tales of mysterious lodgers who may have been Jack the Ripper. The premiere episode was directed by Alfred Hitchcock, who had previously filmed The Lodger in 1927. Edmund Gwenn and Herbert Marshall were working with Hitchcock on the movie Foreign Correspondent when they appeared on this program. The Lodger is a unique suspense episode because it was actually performed in front of a studio audience. Although the response was good, it would be another 2 years until Suspense became a regular series on CBS. Once established in 1942, the show went on to run for 20 years. So take a listen to this. I hope you enjoy our special bonus features that we've provided for The Lodger. And stay tuned after the radio drama as we present the second part in the Hitchcock and Truffaut interviews covering the silent years of Hitchcock's film career.
This is Hollywood and CBS presenting Forecast number 4. Herbert Marshall, directed by Alfred Hitchcock, in the first program of a proposed new series entitled Suspense. Tonight's Forecast program, ladies and gentlemen, represents the ideal form of collaboration. Mr. Alfred Hitchcock, brilliant English director of such outstanding motion pictures as The 39 Steps, Rebecca, and Foreign Correspondent, was eager to create a very special type of radio drama, the suspense story. As narrator and star for his production, he thought at once of the distinguished actor with whom he had been associated in countless British film successes, Herbert Marshall. Mr. Marshall suggested that they dramatize a certain favorite story of his. And that story happened to be the very one Mr. Hitchcock had had in mind. Mrs. Belloc Lowndes' classic in chills, The Lodger. The Lodger is a work of fiction which springs from recorded fact. A story which begins in the year 1888 in London. A London terrorized by the fifth in a succession of recent murders. It was believed that these deeds were the work of one person, a tall, gaunt figure in a black Inverness cape, carrying a small, narrow bag. That meager description provided by a highly unnerved witness was the sum total of all that was known of the murderer. It was enough, however, to keep alive and alert the interest of all London, of all those in fine quarters, and all those in small, grimy houses, as, for example, Ellen Bunting. Ellen was no different from all the other middle-aged housewives dwelling in the great city's squalid Whitechapel district. She knew all the known facts of the case. As Herbert Marshall will tell you, Ellen knew it was quite proper to refer to this wielder of the knife as
the Avenger. Of course, Ellen Bunting was far more concerned with her personal problems than with thoughts of the Avenger. Yet the case of that strange, elusive killer quite often forced all other matters from her mind. There was that mad, meaningless scheme he seemed to follow. All his victims, for example, had been women. All had been young, attractive, and, oddly enough, blonde. But Ellen could no more understand the motive for his brutal slashings than could the police. This night, she and her husband, Robert Bunting, sat before their fireplace reading the newspaper account of the latest murder. The Avenger had struck again. As Ellen expressed it, he might be anybody. He might be the fellow you pass on the street.
It's a terrible thought.
Yes. If only the police had something to go on. It looks like that Avenger's just too quick for him.
Look, it says here that this girl he got last night was like all the others.
Hmm.
Pretty, blonde, and, described by her friends as a very light-hearted girl. What a pity.
Did you ever stop to think who fits that to a T? In fact, fits all those girls?
Why,
my own Daisy.
Oh, that's a horrible thought. Well, maybe it's a good thing she's with her aunt, then, instead of here.
Mm.
London ain't a safe place for any girl right now.
Just the same, I can't help thinking how fine it'll be to have her back here.
Now, Bunting, you know that Daisy seems just as much my own daughter as she is yours.
Mm.
But I'm telling you, there's no sense even thinking about having her back right now. We just can't afford it.
Oh, I know that, Ellen. Only, well, maybe we could manage it some way.
How? Haven't I scrimped myself half crazy trying to keep us going? But you don't care about that, do you? No, your Daisy's more important to you than I am.
No, Ellen, that don't sound like
you. Oh, I can't help if it don't. What are we going to do? Tell me that.
We'll get along, dear. Something will turn up.
We haven't had a lodger for months. Nobody even comes to look at the room anymore.
Yes, but things will work out, Ellen.
They ain't never going to work out. Soon we won't even have a roof over our heads and...
Oh,
I'm sorry, Robbie. I didn't mean to take on so.
Oh, I know, dear, I know. It's all right.
I didn't think it. It's just that I've been so worried.
Well, don't you go worrying another second, old girl. Why, first thing you know, you won't be pretty anymore. You'll have your face all wrinkled
now,
and you...
Now, see here,
now, come
Bunting.
On, now, let's see a smile. Come on, just have one smile for me.
Leave me
just
alone,
one smile like you used to, eh? Well, who do you suppose that could be?
Of the late visitors, Bunting. Do you think it could be somebody looking for rooms?
Well, it might be. Want me to go to the door?
No, I'll go.
Oh.
You just stay here.
Yes, all right. Now, be sure you get a good look at the rooms before you let them in, dear.
Oh, I'm coming. Oh, I do hope it's... Yes, sir?
Is it not true that you let lodgings?
Yes, sir. Won't you come in, sir?
Thank you.
Could I take your cape, sir?
There's no need. Now, I'm looking for a quiet room. It must be quiet.
Oh, we have that, sir. Above all, our house is quiet. Your bag, sir. May I take it?
No, I'll hold it. You'll be so good as to show me the room, please.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir. It's right up these stairs, sir. This way.
Thank you.
You see, sir, there's just my husband and me here, and we're ever so quiet, and I'm sure you'll find this room to your liking, sir. Here we are. Now, I'll just light the gas. There.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
It is pleasant, isn't it, sir? And there's not many rooms with such pretty pictures. Are there now? We've had them in the family for years, sir, and...
Pictures interest me very little. You see, what really impresses me about the room is the very simplicity of it, the bareness.
Yes, sir. It's not at all crowded, is it?
It will be quite suitable, Mrs.
Bunting.
Mrs. Bunting. You see, I do a great deal of studying in my book here, the Holy Bible.
Yes, sir. Please, sir, let me help with your luggage.
No, don't touch it.
Oh, but I only wish to...
Oh, you only wish to help, of course. You must forgive me, Mrs. Bunting. It's just that I'm so very weary.
Of course, sir.
He bringeth them to their desired haven. Beautiful words, Mrs. Bunting.
Indeed they are, sir.
And now at last I have found my haven of rest.
Yes, sir. Then you'll be taking the room.
Let us see now. What are you going to charge me? With attendance, mind. I shall be staying in most of the time, and I shall be wanting meals.
Oh, we can see to that.
Then does 30 shillings a week suit you?
30? Why, yes, sir. Yes, sir, that will be quite all right.
Good, and I shall pay you in advance. My name is Sleuth, Mrs. Bunting.
Mr. Sleuth.
S-L-E-U-T-H. Think of a hound, Mrs. Bunting, and you'll never forget my name. 30 shillings.
Thank you, sir.
And I think I should enjoy a little light supper now, Mrs. Bunting. Bread and butter, perhaps. Could you arrange that?
Well, certainly, sir. I'll do that now. And if you'd be requiring any beer or spirits...
Certainly not.
Oh, sir. What did I say?
I thought you understood me, Mrs. Bunting, and I had hoped that you and your husband were abstainers.
But we are, sir. We don't keep nothing about. I would have had to go out and...
Of course. Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Bunting. I fear I spoke sharply. I don't wish you to think me rude. After all, you've been so kind. Considerate.
I hope I know a gentleman when I see one.
Thank you very much.
Now, I'll just hurry with your supper.
Ellen, did he take the room?
No, don't bother me now. I have to get him some supper.
What do you mean?
Come to the kitchen where he won't hear us.
He took it, Ellen?
Yes,
he took the room?
Yes, we're all right now. Look. 30 shillings. A week in advance.
Oh, it's wonderful. Wonderful. And Ellen, do you see what this means?
Yes, you can have Daisy now.
Yes.
Here, Bunting, warm that teapot and put some tea leaves.
Righto. Yeah, do you know something, old girl? We're not going to worry too much about Daisy being in danger of that Avenger fella.
Whatever do you mean, Robbie?
Well, she's not a girl who takes a drink, you know.
What's that to do with it, please?
Oh, something I read in the paper while he was upstairs with the gentleman. They just found out that every one of the Avenger's victims had been drinking. They figure he must be some kind of a rabid abstainer.
What a peculiar chap. Now hurry, Bunting, please.
Yes.
Two thoughts only governed Ellen's mind. The lodger's light supper and her own good fortune at having such a lodger. Mr. Sleuth was an eccentric sort, but then he was such a gentleman, so quiet, so very religiously inclined. She started up a staircase to Mr. Sleuth's room, her husband at her side.
Won't we know how to be safe, though, once Daisy's back in London, eh? We'll see she stays closer than the earth, Well, I'll be downstairs. Hurry up with his supper, old girl.
She has cast down many wounded from her. Yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Come in. And to know the wickedness of folly.
Why, Mr.
Yes? What is it?
Those pictures. Those pretty girls. You've turned all their faces to the wall.
And that maneuver, that strange action, was the beginning of Ellen's concern. Soon there came to her a recollection of the black Inverness cape, the small narrow bag, the urgent matter of alcoholic drink. And these details began to shape themselves into a pattern which grew more disturbing with each passing hour. The day following, the lodger did not leave the upstairs room once, nor did he leave the next day. And the oddness of this took its place in the pattern. Then, too, the approaching arrival of Daisy, her stepdaughter, added to her concern. On the second night, her sleep was restless with vague, horrifying images. And so, when she heard the first stealthy footsteps outside her bedroom, she was instantly awake. Tensely, she followed those steps downstairs, down the hallway. She heard the front door open and then click shut. Utter stillness fell upon the house. And outside, the streets were so silent she could hear distinctly the clock from a church tower a mile away toll the hour. In her troubled frenzy, she pictured a lone figure plodding through the deep fog, moving quietly, stealthily, stalking, searching, finding. Soon after she heard the lodger return, she sought to quiet the horrible dread which had possessed her. She assured herself that Daisy's arrival that day was no cause for alarm. Now she reasoned, how could there be anything really evil about so religious a gentleman as Mr. Sleuth? But for her, there was no more sleep, merely a tormented state of half-consciousness.
A state which suddenly dropped from her shortly after daybreak. Horrible murder. That was the piercing scream of a newsboy far down the street.
The Avenger strikes during
the night! Erin Bunting heard the boy cry out the Avenger's latest stroke, made during the night. First glimpse that morning of the gray-faced lodger brought the sleepless night's warm terror full to the surface. But on the next instant, she saw the pitiable, helpless weariness in his eyes, and curiously the terror began to pass. She found that she was hoping desperately that her fears were unfounded. Earlier, she had determined to tell Bunting of the awful convictions in her mind. Now, however, she felt she must be certain. Certain before she spoke to a soul. She knew there was one thing she must examine. That was the lodger's single piece of luggage. She'd thought of it often. What could it hold? Not much in the way of clothing, surely. It was too small, too narrow. It was more like a case. A case for a knife. It was along toward noon that Erin found her opportunity to search the lodger's room. Soon after Bunting left to meet Daisy, Mr. Sleuth himself walked from the house. Erin watched the tall, thin figure in the black Inverness cape disappear down the street, and then she rushed upstairs, into the room. Quickly, she moved to the closet. It was no different from what it had always been, utterly empty. She found nothing under the bed. She went then to the chest of drawers against the wall. She opened the top drawer and found inside nothing but a frayed shirt, two handkerchiefs. The next drawer, underclothes, socks. The next, empty. There remained then only one possible place for the small, narrow bag, the bottom drawer, and it was locked. Tugging at the drawer, she heard suddenly the opening of the front door downstairs. Panic-stricken, she rushed out of the room and down the hall to the head of the stairs.
Upstairs, Ellen. Ellen, Daisy's here.
Oh, Mother Ellen, it's so good to see you. And well, whatever's the matter?
Yes, you've gone quite white.
Oh, well, I'm all right. I wasn't expecting you so soon.
Oh, you don't know how fine it is to be back, Mother Ellen. Oh, the country's all right in its way, but there's nothing like London now, is there?
No, there isn't.
But as long as that adventure's about, I can see we're going to have to do something about these blonde locks, eh, Ellen?
Oh, don't worry about that. I'll dye them, maybe. Or just pin them under my hat.
Daisy, I might as well get you settled.
Oh, now, Father, isn't that just like her? She's straight to the point, and no fuss.
Well, I'll bet a sixpence you'll have a dustcloth in your head before you've got your coat off.
Mrs. Bunting, I see my door is open.
Oh, we were just leaving, shall we?
Does this mean that all of you have been in my room?
Oh, not at all, sir.
What must I do? Keep it locked?
But you see, sir, I was just tidying up a bit, and Mr. Bunting, he brought his daughter up, sir. She just arrived. This is Daisy, sir.
Pleased to meet you, sir.
She's been away for quite a long while, you see, Mr. Sleuth, and that's why we're a bit excited, you might say.
Yes, you must have been surprised when you came in, hearing us laughing and carrying on that way.
Yes, I must say I was. However, Miss Daisy, there are all types of joy, are there not?
Yes, I'm sure there are.
The despicable evil joy of the abandoned and the divine happiness of the blessed. A vast difference, that. You do understand me, don't you?
Why, yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Sleuth.
I devoutly hope so, Miss Daisy. Nowadays, there are so very few young women like yourself who do. In fact, I all but despaired ever of finding one.
If you'll excuse us now, sir, we'll be getting Daisy's things put away.
Of course, Mrs. Bunting, and I must be getting to my room. Believe me, Miss Daisy, it's been a revelation to meet you.
Oh, thank you, sir.
I'm sure we shall have much to discuss.
He's a queer one, all right. But such a gentleman, isn't he?
At that moment, Ellen had been determined to pour out her terrible knowledge, and then the moment passed by.
She told herself that perhaps the past few days had been nothing more than a grim illusion, a tormenting play of imagination. She would wait then until she had attended the coroner's inquest into the last Avenger murder. There, perhaps, she could hear evidence to disprove all her fears, to assure her there was no earthly harm in Daisy being so near the lodger. This was her gravest concern now, for on the next day, Mr. Sleuth made it a point to see the girl more than once. And fearfully, Ellen saw that Daisy welcomed his visits. As Ellen was preparing to step out to the inquest, she heard once more the voices of her stepdaughter and the lodger coming to her through the kitchen door. She hesitated before entering. Tense. Strangely apprehensive.
I do believe, Mrs. Lube, I've never known a gentleman with such funny ideas. Oh, Mother Ellen, you should hear what Mr. Sleuth was just saying.
Perhaps, Daisy, you would excuse yourself. And...
he thinks people, and especially girls, should spend all their time praying.
I sought to explain, Mrs. Bunting, that all women are placed on this earth filled with evil. They therefore must struggle constantly to find the paths of righteousness.
Why, Mr. Sleuth, you mean a girl's not to enjoy life at all? Not to have fun?
Frivolity, my child, is the devil's breeding ground. And all his implements are there. Temptation, pleasure, wine.
Oh, that's crazy. Well, there's nothing I like better than a glass of wine. And I'm...
You drink.
She didn't know what she was saying, Mrs. Sleuth. Just a child. And Daisy, you'd better go now.
But I didn't say nothing wrong. What's the harm in a glass of wine?
She lieth in wait as for a prey, and increaseth the transgressors among men.
Oh, I don't know what you mean. I never heard such nonsense.
You call Holy Scripture nonsense? So what I prayed against is true. You are beyond salvation.
That's not so. I'm a good girl, I am, and I won't have you saying.
Daisy, go into the front room.
It's quite all right, Mrs. Bunting. I must be going upstairs anyway. I'm used to being misunderstood, you know. People never realize that my efforts are simply for the greater good of humanity.
Of course, sir.
And that the power on high will direct my hand toward the expulsion of all evil.
Daisy, listen to me.
Yes?
I've got to tell you about...
About what, Mother Ellen?
Nothing. I've got to go out for a while now. I'll be back.
The moment to reveal the secret horror had come again and passed. Ellen's sudden recollection of Mr. Sleuth as he stood in the doorway had overwhelmed her. She must give him this last chance, this last frantic search for disproving evidence, this trip to the inquest. If that chance should fail, then she would tell Bunting or the police. So with the knowledge that Bunting was left in the house to look after Daisy, she boarded the underground train bound for the coroner's court. But as the train pulled away from the station, a new torture came to her, began to mount in her mind. It was the sudden realization that provided Sleuth was the murderer, she was equally responsible for his crimes. She had been giving him protection.
Protection.
If anything should happen to Daisy, she would be equally guilty.
Guilty.
Fully as guilty as the Avenger. Ellen, seated at the rear of the small but crowded inquest room, listened to each of the witnesses as they were called. And from one of them, she found the first hope she had known for many days. This witness lived next to the alley in which the Avenger had committed his crime that night. She had seen him from her window, and the man she described in no way resembled Ellen's lodger. But in another moment, Ellen's hope was swept away. It was pointed out that the fog had been so heavy that night that the witness could not possibly have seen the murderer from her window. She left the stand, replaced by a Mr. Kennett. This elderly gentleman was certain that he had not only seen, but talked with the Avenger. It was in Regent's Park he testified, only a few moments before...
A few moments before the murder, Mr. Coroner, when I saw him, he was quite a tall man, very gaunt-looking, and carrying a handbag.
A handbag, you say?
Yes, a small, narrow one. Just such a bag, I might add, as might contain a knife.
I then heard these words, the tension which had been mounting up within her became almost unbearable. Rigid with horror, she gripped the arms of her chair. She heard the coroner.
I shall have to ask for more order in the court. And now, Mr. Cannard, I understand you heard this man speak.
Oh, yes. He had a rather high, hesitating voice. An educated man, I would judge, but quite mad.
What do you mean by that?
Well, as he emerged from the fog, he was talking aloud to himself. Believe me, sir, he was reciting scriptures from the Bible.
Scriptures from the Bible. Horrified, Ellen rose from her seat, only half hearing the confusion about her.
Are you asking us to believe? I would say, Mr. Kenneth, that the man we are looking for would be least of all a religious man.
And that's where you're in error, Mr. Coroner. The religious note is the very key to the case.
Very interesting. That'll be all, Mr. Kenneth.
Just a moment, sir. Don't you understand? The man you're after must be a religious maniac. That's the only explanation possible.
You will please stand down.
The court was dismissing the very truth. Ellen knew that now. She would no longer keep silent. Her hands shot forth and she screamed.
I want to say...
Ellen Bunting, on the verge of speaking, had fainted. And then, when she was revived a few moments later, she said nothing. Her brain was in too great a turmoil. Her nerves too shocked. Like one in a dream, she allowed herself to be led from the courtroom. The voices of spectators were only vague sounds to her.
I thought she was going to say something.
Yes, it was hysterics.
Eh? Yeah, that bit about the knife.
The knife. As Ellen Bunting proceeded homeward, the remarks from the spectators remained in her mind. She heard them over and over.
Yeah, that bit about the knife. Just such a bag as might contain a knife.
We'll see she stays closer in the house, eh? No harm in being safe.
Direct my hand toward the expulsion of all evil. Expulsion of all evil.
What's the harm in a glass of wine? I didn't say nothing more.
As Ellen neared her neighborhood, her dread increased. With each moving footstep, the grip of terror grew tighter about her. She moved faster. If only she were in time. She was two streets away from the house. Then one. Then she saw Bunty. Sharply, like the thrust of a knife, she realized what this meant. Daisy was left alone with the lodger.
Bunting!
Yes, Ellen,
what is it? Oh, Bunting, tell me, Bunting. Where's Daisy? Where is she? I say, where?
Why, at home.
Oh, listen to me. Try to understand. Sleuth is the Avenger.
What are you saying?
Our lodger. He's the Avenger, Bunting. Oh, but there's no time for that. Daisy's in danger. Hurry.
Yes. Daisy!
Daisy, where are you? I look in the kitchen, Bunting. You try the sitting room. Daisy! Where are you, Daisy?
Answer me, Daisy!
Oh.
By the bedroom.
Jeez, she's not here. What about the dining room?
Look, she's not there. She's not downstairs.
Then there's just his room. Go on. Open the door.
Okay, Mr. Hitchcock. Crack, cut, and clear.
Did you say cut? What's the idea, Hitch? I have a few more lines to do.
As Mr. Marshall, the narrator, you have. Not as Mr. Sleuth, the lodger.
Hitch, you can't stop the playwright here. It isn't fair, you know.
Why isn't it, Bart? What more is there to say?
For Mr. Hitchcock. Won't people want to know what Bunting and me found in the room?
All right, Ellen. What precisely did you find?
Well, nothing, sir.
There. You see? Nothing. No lodger, no Bible. And that locked dresser drawer. What about that?
We unlocked it, sir.
And what was in it?
Nothing, sir.
You are certain, Mrs. Bunting?
Oh, you gave me quite a turn, Mr. Mr. Marshall. Yes, sir, I'm sure, sir. There was nothing.
Well, begging your pardon, Mr. Hitchcock, but don't you think we'd better just mention about Daisy?
I don't know, Bunting. What do you think we ought to say?
Well, just that the reason she wasn't in the house when Ellen and me got there was, well, she'd gone out for a walk, that's all.
Did she enjoy it?
Oh, very much, sir. Made it to King's Cross and back in just under an hour, sir.
Splendid time, Bunting. Well, there you are, Bart. There's the story.
Now, wait a minute, Mr. Hitchcock. You can't do that. That's not the story.
Of course it's not. Now, look here, Hitch. Here's the fellow who composed and conducted all our music, Wilbur Hatch. He wants to know about this, too. Everybody does.
All right, Bart. What is it they want to know?
What became of Mr. Sleuth?
Oh, him. Why, he left that afternoon. They never saw him again. And now I think we ought to say something about the Columbia forecast.
Mr. Hitchcock, sir, will you please...
Stop him, Mr. Marshall.
Hitch, listen to me.
Yes? What is it?
They want to know when the Avenger finally was caught.
Oh, well, let me ask you something, Bart. Are you acquainted with Loretta Young?
Yes, what's that got to do with it?
Well, in next week's Columbia preview series, Miss Young will take the starring role in the drama of an American Red Cross nurse. That's good news, isn't it?
Oh, that's great. But now listen, Hitch, you've just got to tell that audience exactly when and how Mr. Sleuth was caught.
Caught? Why on earth should he be caught?
Why? Well, he was the Avenger, wasn't he?
Was he?
Your guess, gentle listener, is as good as ours. Even Mrs. Belloc Lowndes, who wrote the novel, isn't entirely sure. For his masterful direction, our thanks to Alfred Hitchcock, whose latest pictures are David O. Selznick's Rebecca and Walter Wanger's Foreign Correspondent. For his superb characterization of Mr. Sleuth, our thanks to Herbert Marshall. And our thanks to the outstanding British character actor who tonight portrayed the role of Bunting, Edmund Gwenn. If you liked tonight's program and want to hear more in the same highly original Hitchcock vein, radio versions of The Lady Vanishes and The 39 Steps, for example, write to CBS and tell us so. Your interest will help bring suspense to the air as a weekly feature. Forecast next week presents from Hollywood, Loretta Young in Angel, first of a proposed series based on the adventures and the romance of a typical Red Cross nurse. From New York, a new sort of comedy show, Ed Gardner as Archie in Duffy's Tavern, with Gertrude Neeson, Colonel Stoopnagel, Larry Adler, and John Kirby's orchestra. Don't miss Forecast at this hour next week. Thomas Prebenson speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Mouten, comment, Mouten Inc., comment on dit ça? Mouten Eagle?
The mountain eagle.
Oui. That was no good.
Ça, c'était pas bon.
Moins bon. Alors le premier, enfin, ensuite c'est Lodger.
Afterwards was The Lodger.
Qui est le film que vous...
Well, The Lodger, of course, that's another story.
Et ça, c'est une autre histoire, The Lodger.
The Lodger was the first true Hitchcock picture.
Le Lodger a été le vrai, le premier vrai Hitchcock picture.
I saw a play.
J'ai vu une pièce.
And it was called Who Is He?
Qui s'appelait Qui est-il?
And it was a play based on the book.
Basé sur
Mrs.
le livre.
Mrs. Belloc Lowndes.
De Mrs. Belloc Lowndes.
Called The Lodger.
Qui s'appelait Le Lodger.
The story was the house that took in lodgers.
L'histoire d'une maison qui prenait des
and the,
locataires.
And the woman of
la
the house
de la maison
wondered.
se demander...
Is the man upstairs Jack the Ripper or not?
Si l'homme était Barbe Bleue ou non.
Jack l'Éventreur.
Jack l'Éventreur ou non.
But I treated it purely from her point of view. They have made it since... And
je l'ai traité simplement, purement de son point de vue à elle. Mais depuis, ils l'ont fait...
They've done it two or three times since, but...
deux ou trois fois, mais...
Too elaborate and...
Mais trop élaboré.
Une fois avec John Brown, je crois.
Now, of course, there is one slight difficulty.
Évidemment, il y a une petite difficulté.
The leading man is England's matinee idol.
L'acteur principal, c'est l'idole de matinée de l'Angleterre.
And that's Ivor Novello.
Ivor Novello.
But he was a big name.
Qui était un très grand nom à ce moment-là.
Well, these are the problems that we face with the star system.
Ceci sont les problèmes dont nous allons faire face avec le système de vedettes.
Always the story has to be compromised.
Toujours l'histoire doit être compromise.
Because a star cannot be a villain.
Parce qu'une vedette ne pouvait pas être un vilain.
Ah oui, parce que vous, dans le, il n'était pas prévu que c'était un personnage innocent. Enfin, c'était.
Was it not foreseen that he was an innocent? Wasn't he innocent?
Yes, but a story of this kind.
Oui, mais une histoire de cette sorte.
He should have gone on into the night, and we should never have known.
Il aurait fallu qu'il s'en aille dans la nuit et que nous ne sachions jamais.
Ah oui, vraiment?
Yeah, but you cannot do that.
Je ne peux pas faire ça.
With a big star,
avec
you must say he is innocent.
Il faut dire il est innocent.
Oui, mais je suis étonné que M. Hitchcock ait envie de faire un film où, où le public ne sait pas.
But I'm surprised that Mr. Hitchcock would want to do a picture where the public would not know at the end.
Well, in this case, I think that if you have suspense, is he or is he not
Jack the Ripper?
If you say yes, he's Jack the Ripper.
Si vous dites que oui, il est Jack l'Éventreur.
You've merely confirmed a suspicion.
Vous avez simplement confirmé une suspicion.
Oui, oui, oui.
That to me is not dramatic.
Et pour moi, ce n'est pas dramatique.
Oui, mais si... Oui, oui, bien sûr.
But we went the other way.
Mais nous sommes allés dans l'autre
and
direction.
And we showed that he wasn't Jack the Ripper.
Et nous avons montré qu'il n'était pas Jack l'Éventreur.
I went in, I found the same problem many, many years after.
Plusieurs années plus tard, j'ai rencontré le même problème.
Making a film Suspicion.
Faisant un film qui s'appelait Suspicion.
With Cary Grant.
Avec Cary Grant.
Cary Grant couldn't be a murderer.
Il ne pouvait pas être un assassin, Cary Grant.
Est-ce qu'il aurait refusé, lui?
Would he have refused?
Cary, at that time, no, not necessarily. No, not necessarily.
Non,
but the front office, we call the front office.
Mais ce qu'on appelle le bureau de les producteurs.
Oui. Marquez, j'ai lu le livre de
Before
the Fact, oui. Et je connais très bien le film.
And I know the picture very well.
Et je ne trouve pas du tout que le film, que le scénario soit inférieur au roman.
And I don't think at all that the picture is inferior to the novel.
But I had an ending for that picture.
Mais j'avais un dénouement pour ce film, yes.
There's a famous scene where he carries a glass of milk.
Il y a une scène très célèbre dans laquelle il porte un verre de lait.
You know, when I had that scene, I put a light in the milk.
Quand j'avais cette scène, j'avais mis une lumière dans le lait.
Ah oui.
So it would show.
Pour que ça montre.
Comment une lumière dans le lait? Une lumière sur le lait?
No, in the milk.
Dans le lait.
Oh,
c'est bon.
A light in the milk, because I wanted it to be luminous.
Parce que je voulais que ce soit lumineux.
Oui.
The ending I wanted to do, but they couldn't permit it.
La fin que je voulais faire, mais ne pouvaient pas le permettre.
The girl in the story knows
la fille dans l'histoire
that her
sait que son mari
is a murderer.
Est un assassin.
So she writes a letter to her mother.
Alors elle écrit une lettre à sa mère.
Dear mother. I'm desperately in love with him.
Je suis désespérément amoureuse de lui.
But I don't want to live. He's going to kill me, and I'd rather die.
Il va me tuer et je préfère mourir.
But I think society should be protected from
him. Mais je pense que la société devrait être protégée de lui.
And she puts it by the bed.
Et elle met cette lettre au
comes
lit.
Up with the milk.
Viens,
she says,
le lait,
will you
dit,
send this letter to mother for me, dear?
Est-ce que tu enverras
sure,
cette lettre à maman pour moi? Il dit,
he
oui.
Gives her the milk. She drinks
lait, elle
and
le boit,
dies.
Et meurt.
Fade out.
Et fade out.
One scene.
Just a minute, I have to find
fade out.
Fade out is, you know,
fondue.
Fondue, yes.
Fondue, ça va, c'est ça, Hélène.
Okay.
Right.
One, then après.
Et après.
One short scene. Cary Grant with a letter.
Une courte scène, Cary Grant.
Whistling cheerfully.
Qui siffle.
Opens the mailbox.
Il ouvre la boîte à lettres et il la fout dedans.
C'était très bon.
Ah,
très,
oui.
Bon.
Ah,
très,
ah
bon.
Oui.
Très bon. Très bon. Seulement.
Yes, very good, but.
Le roman est très très bon. Mais le scénario aussi.
The novel is very, very good, but the scenario too.
Je trouve qu'on ne sent pas de.
I think that you don't.
On ne sent pas de compromis dans le scénario.
Any compromise in the scenario.
C'est vraiment l'histoire d'une femme.
It's truly the story of a woman.
Qui s'apercevant que son mari n'est pas ce qu'elle a rêvé.
Isn't that what she's dreamed of?
Brode en elle-même, arrive à croire qu'il est un assassin.
And begins and finally is convinced that he's a murderer.
C'est un finalement, ça en fait une histoire moins exceptionnelle que celle du roman.
It becomes less unusual than that of the novel.
Mais plus belle psychologiquement,
but
vraiment.
But psychologically, really more beautiful.
Yes.
C'est-à-dire qu'on peut même penser.
Because you can even think
qu'un roman tiré du scénario.
That a novel taken from the scenario
serait meilleur que le vrai roman.
Would have been better than the original novel.
Yes.
Le caractère de Cary Grant était that très is, réussi.
The character of Cary Grant was very, very successful. Yeah.
Ce qui manquait un peu dans le film, peut-être.
What was perhaps lacking in the picture.
C'était des notations.
Were certain notations.
Sur le fait qu'il s'intéresse aux autres femmes.
On the fact that he is interested in other women.
Yes, yes.
C'est-à-dire, dans le scénario, il est uniquement.
In the scenario, he's exclusively.
Un peu malhonnête avec l'argent.
Yes. A little bit dishonest with money.
That's right, yes.
Mais j'ai revu le film il y a une dizaine de jours.
I've seen the picture again 10 days ago.
Oh really? Yeah.
Et on croit énormément à leur scène de bonheur.
And one believes really completely in their scenes, in the scenes of their happiness together.
Mm-hmm. Pour moi, c'est un de vos plus beaux films
for
américains.
For me, it's one of your most beautiful American pictures.
Et la dernière scène avec la voiture.
And the last scene with the picture is
très abstraite.
Very abstract.
Mm-hmm. Théorique.
Theoretical.
Et quand même très très belle.
And yet very very très, beautiful.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the lodger.
Retournons au lodger.
Oui.
Because it was the first film.
Parce que c'était le
premier. Possibly influenced by my period in Germany.
Possiblement influencé par ma période en Allemagne.
Oui.
The whole approach to it.
Toute l'approche.
Was
à ce film
instinctive with me.
Était instinctif avec moi.
It was the first time I'd exercised any style.
C'était la première fois que j'avais réellement manié un style, exercé mon style.
In truth, you could almost say it was my first picture.
En vérité, on pourrait dire que c'était mon tout premier film.
Oui, je l'ai vu, moi, j'aime beaucoup, il est très bien.
Yes.
In the first place, I took, shall we say, pure narrative.
D'abord, j'ai pris ce que l'on peut décrire comme une pure narrative.
And presented for the first time
ideas
in purely visual form.
Des idées dans une forme purement visuelle.
Oui.
I took 10 minutes.
J'ai pris 10 minutes.
On a late winter afternoon in London.
D'un hiver
starting
tard,
about 5:20.
C'est l'après-midi tard dans l'hiver à Londres, commençant à 5h20.
And I opened the picture with the head of
et
a screaming blonde girl.
Avec la tête d'une fille blonde qui hurlait.
And I remember the way I photographed it. I got a sheet of glass.
J'ai pris une panne de verre.
I laid the head of the girl on the glass and spread the hair until it filled the frame.
Ses cheveux jusqu'à ce que ça remplisse le cadre.
And underneath the glass, lit it from behind.
Et en dessous le verre, je l'ai allumé par derrière.
And then I cut from the big head.
Et ensuite j'ai découpé de la grosse tête.
To an electric sign. Which was advertising a musical play.
D'une revue musicale.
Said, ce soir, tonight, golden curls. Tonight, golden curls.
Ce soir, boucle d'or.
And panned from the sign.
Et j'ai panned de
to the water.
Jusqu'à l'eau.
And it's flicking in the water. And out of the water comes the dead head.
On voit la tête morte.
Of the
de la fille
brown girl
qui est noyée,
pulled ashore,
qui retirait
consternation,
murdered, assassinat,
and no titles,
aucun titre,
no titles, police crowd, reporter,
police,
notebook,
journaliste,
reporter to telephone,
journaliste au téléphone.
He was a reporter for a wire service, not for a newspaper.
Pour un syndicat, non pas pour un journal.
Now I proceeded to show
non.
What happened to that piece of news.
Je m'applique à montrer ce qui est arrivé à cette nouvelle.
Typed out on the special wire service machine.
C'est tapé sur la machine du syndicat.
Now you read.
Alors vous lisez.
Only a little bit.
Seulement quelques phrases.
Then had people in the clubs looking.
Les gens dans les clubs regardaient.
Newspaper people, the broadcasting people.
Les gens des journaux, les
being
gens
broadcasted,
des émissions.
People listening.
On entend les gens qui écoutent aux émissions.
Now following the newspaper and the running. Non. You know they call them scintillating signs they have on Broadway. You know they run.
Alors le journal allumé comme à Times Square.
Yes, they have the Place de l'Opéra. Each time you got some more information.
Et à chaque moment, à chaque fois, vous avez une information supplémentaire. Vous en apprenez davantage.
That he murdered only fair-haired girls.
Qu'il a assassiné seulement les filles blondes.
He always did it on Tuesday.
Il le faisait toujours un mardi.
How many he has done to date?
Combien de fois il a fait ça?
Reasons. Speculating why he did it.
Spéculation sur ses motifs.
He goes around dressed in a black cloak.
Il se promène vêtu d'une tunique noire.
He carries a black bag.
Il porte une valise noire.
What might be in the bag?
Qu'est-ce qu'il y a possiblement dans ce sac?
The news was, this information was spread over all these different means of communication.
Et cette information est descendue par tous ces différents moyens de communication.
Now, the newspaper
non,
goes out.
Le journal est éliminé.
Now the effect on various
sort,
people.
Plutôt. Maintenant, l'effet du journal sur les différents
it's
gens.
It's now nearly 5:30.
Maintenant, il est 5:30.
Chorus girls are coming off the stage. The blonde ones are terrified.
Les blondes sont terrifiées.
The brunettes are laughing.
Les brunettes rigolent.
The hairdressing establishment, girls going home, stealing dark curls and putting under their hats.
Les coiffeurs, les gens qui rentrent à la maison, qui volent des boucles noires et les mettent sous leur chapeau.
Oui, oui, oui. Oui. Et ça a été un grand succès, je crois.
It was a great success.
When it was first shown.
Quand ça a été montré d'abord?
They sent the distributors. Sent the head of their publicity department, a woman, and one of their high officials.
Et un de leurs grands officiers.
They looked at the film.
Ils ont regardé le film.
And went back to report to the big boss.
Ils sont retournés pour faire un rapport au grand patron.
In the film center, Wardour Street, it's called.
Au centre du film Wardour Street. Water Street.
Water Street, that's where they all the film.
W-A-
film row. W-A-R-D-O-U-R.
Wardour Street. Oui.
Anyway, I said impossible to show.
Ils ont dit impossible.
Too bad. The film is terrible.
C'est trop mauvais, le film est terrible.
Trop mauvais.
Terrible film.
C'est un film terrible.
Et à votre avis, quelles étaient leurs œuvres?
2 days later.
2 jours plus tard.
The big boss comes down to the studio.
Arrive au studio.
To look at it.
Pour regarder.
He arrived at 2:30.
Il arrive à 2h30.
Mrs. Hitchcock and I were not married then, but we were going to be married in about 3 or 4 months' time.
Madame Hitchcock et moi n'étions pas mariés à ce moment-là, mais nous allions être mariés dans 3 ou 4 mois.
We couldn't bear to wait in the studio to
nous
know the result.
Nous n'avons pas pu attendre dans le studio pour connaître le résultat.
And we walked the streets of London.
Et nous avons parcouru à pied les rues de Londres.
Wondering.
Nous demandons.
What's happening?
Qu'est-ce qui se passe?
And finally we walked for about 1 hour and a half or more.
Et nous avons marché comme ça pendant 1 heure et demie ou plus.
And I said it must be over by now.
Et j'ai dit ça doit être fini maintenant.
We get a cab taxi and
on
go back.
On prend un taxi et on retournera.
We got back.
On est retourné.
And I went in.
Je suis entré.
Looking at the faces of the people in the studio.
Regardant dans les figures des gens dans le studio.
He agrees it's terrible.
Il est d'accord que c'est terrible.
It wasn't a happy ending to the walk. We were hoping we'd go back and say, oh, it's wonderful.
Il n'y a pas eu une fin heureuse à ces promenades. On s'attendait à retourner et puis à trouver que tout le monde serait radieux, etc. Non.
So they put the film on the shelf.
Alors, ils ont mis le film sur l'étagère.
Ah oui, probablement.
They stopped booking it.
Ils n'ont plus fait d'engagement.
They were booking it on Novello's name, you see.
Parce qu'ils avaient fait des engagements sur la réputation de Novello.
Ah.
And about some couple of months later,
et plusieurs mois plus tard,
they decided to take another look at it.
Ils ont décidé de le regarder une fois de plus.
And they wanted some changes made. I can't remember
et
what
ils
they were.
Plusieurs changements, je m'en rappelle plus lesquels.
I agreed to make about 2.
J'ai été d'accord pour en faire 2.
And finally, the picture was shown.
Et finalement, le film a été montré.
And it was acclaimed as the greatest British picture ever made.
Et ça a été acclamé immédiatement comme le plus grand film britannique jamais fait.
Oui, dans le Gers, c'est un film d'effet beaucoup. Il me semble que votre travail de caméra aujourd'hui est
But
plus...
I think that your camera work today is...
vise à faire des effets...
aims to create effects...
qui ne se remarquent pas en tant qu'effet quand même.
Which are not noticed as effects.
C'est-à-dire que l'emplacement de la caméra ne plus jamais...
Well, that's the change in general style.
Ça, c'est le change de style général.
No, I wouldn't do the ceiling again.
Oui, il est vrai. Je ne ferais plus.
I would be satisfied with the moving chandelier.
Je serais satisfait maintenant du lustre qui bouge. Ça me satisferait.
C'est ça. Parce qu'un metteur en scène anglais...
For instance, because a British...
qui avait voulu faire un
director
film
who wanted to do a
tout à fait à votre manière.
Picture in your style, an imitation of your style.
Lee Thompson.
Avait
mis le personnage allait prendre quelque chose dans le frigidaire.
Had his character go to fetch something in the frigidaire.
Et la caméra se trouvait dans le frigidaire.
And the camera was in the frigidaire.
Well, c'est quelque chose que vous ne feriez jamais.
And that's the sort of thing you would never do.
Never do. That's like shooting through the fireplace.
C'est comme de tourner à travers la cheminée.
C'est ça. Ah oui, derrière le feu, oui.
Derrière le feu, oui.
Et à la fin de Lodger, il y a un début
at the end of Lodger,
une ambiance de lynchage aussi. De lynchage.
Lynchage?
Oui.
There's an atmosphere of lynch, a lynch atmosphere.
Yes, that's right. Yes, ouais, sure.
Et je crois même, je me souviens plus, je crois qu'on l'attache avec des
menottes. Yes, he was handcuffed, you see.
Yes,
and he tried to climb over some railings and got hung on the railings.
Well,
the handcuffs, of course, were a thing that, an idea that goes, I don't know, psychologically fairly deep.
This,
I don't know what do you think, what François thinks the
je ne sais pas ce que François pense.
Psychological
la psychologie
or almost psychotic
presque psychotique
attitude is towards tying up
l'attitude envers lier quelque chose Je ne sais pas ce que vous pensez.
Somewhere the area of a fetish, isn't it?
C'est dans le domaine du fétichisme déjà, le fétiche.
Oui. Isn't that so?
Vous ne croyez pas vous-même?
Je sais pas, moi ça m'a beaucoup impressionné dans vos films.
I don't know, it's impressed me very much in your pictures.
On le retrouve
no,
because one finds it very, one encounters it very often in your pictures.
Well, but I think that somehow, I don't know what it is.
Je crois que je ne sais pas
comment. The handcuffing has a deeper significance.
Mais le menottage a une un sens plus profond aux gens.
Oui, mais parce qu'il est. Oui, en même temps, c'est le symbole le plus immédiat de la privation de liberté. Oui.
It's the most immediate symbol, perhaps, of the deprivation of liberty.
Well, yes, but it, no, it has sex connotations.
Il a aussi, non, mais il parle lui de connotation de sens dans le terme sexuel.
Ah, peut-être. Oui.
Ça ne vous a pas frappé?
Oh, yes.
J'ai pas l'esprit psychanalytique.
I don't have a psychological, psychoanalytical frame of mind at all, says he. Ah.
He doesn't.
Et aussi dans cette scène des grilles, alors de la menotte, toujours.
And in the scene of the handcuffing.
Je n'ai vu le film qu'une fois.
I've seen that picture only once.
Mais il me semble que vous avez voulu quand même.
But it seems to me that you did want to.
Un petit peu peut-être.
Perhaps.
Évoquer le Christ un peu à un moment.
Suggest Christ.
Take him down from the cross. When they lifted him down.
Quand on a soulevé de la croix.
C'est ça, oui. Mm. Oui.
That was an idea. That did occur to me.
Oui, oui, ça m'a, j'y ai pensé.
Oui. Et c'est en ça que c'est vraiment effectivement le premier film Hitchcockien.
Effectively, it is the first Hitchcockian.
Mais même par le thème, parce que.
Even in its theme, because
c'est une chose que vous avez reprise très souvent, l'homme accusé d'un crime qu'il n'a pas commis.
It's a thing that you've taken very often, man accused of a crime he has not committed.
Yes.
Et même, on pourrait trouver que
one might think that
le I Confess, par exemple, ressemble pas mal à Lodger de ce point de vue-là.
I Confess perhaps has similarities with Lodger.
Could be, yes, to some extent. The, you know, the theme of the innocent man being accused.
C'est le thème de l'homme innocent étant accusé.
I think provides the audience with a sense of terrible danger.
Danger terrible.
That they might be in the same position.
Qu'ils pourraient eux être dans la même position.
Rather than a guilty man on the run.
Plutôt qu'un homme coupable qui est en train de s'évader.
C'est-à-dire qu'il satisfait à la fois.
That is to say, it satisfies at the same time.
Pour le public,
for the audience,
le désir de voir des choses clandestines,
the desire to see illegal things,
et en même temps, il permet quand même de s'identifier.
And at the same time, they might identify with the.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
C'est ça. C'est l'homme ordinaire plongé dans des aventures extraordinaires.
Who's plunged into extraordinary,
yes.
Unaverage adventures.
That's right. Sure.
Ça c'est yes. Une constante.
Yes. That's a constant of your picture.
Oh, it is. It is. Well, it because it represents every man and the average man. Is the best identification. This is again is taking the audience into account.
Yes, ceci encore prend l'audience. C'est parce que je prends l'audience toujours.
Oui.
En considération.
C'est ça. Ce qu'il y a avant d'abandonner le muet, je me demande si.
Before I abandon the silent pictures.
On ne devrait pas dire quelques généralités sur le muet justement.
I would like perhaps to. Perhaps we'd like to have a few generalities on silent pictures.
C'est-à-dire que
silent pictures are the pure motion picture form.
C'est la forme la plus pure de.
C'est ça.
There was only one thing missing.
Il n'y avait qu'une chose qui manquait.
In the silent pictures.
Au film muet.
And that was sound coming out of the people's mouths.
Qui sortait des bouches.
And sounds coming from the streets.
Et les sons qui venaient des rues.
But it didn't warrant the big change that sound brought in.
Mais ça ne justifiait pas le grand changement que le son a amené avec.
In other words, you see.
C'est-à-dire.
The silent picture.
Les films muets.
Was merely looking at them purely from a realistic standpoint.
Et regardant d'un point de vue réalistique.
It was natural sound that was missing.
C'était vraiment le son naturel seulement qui leur manquait.
In other words, there was no need.
Dire qu'il n'y avait aucun besoin.
To abandon the technique.
La technique.
Of the pure motion picture.
Du cinéma pur.
The way it was abandoned when sound came in.
De la manière dont ça a été abandonné quand on a amené le son.
C'est ça.
Et oui, sûrement dans les dernières années du muet.
Yes, surely in the final years of silent pictures.
Dans l'ensemble, enfin, de la production, peut-être.
On the whole, the production, perhaps.
On était arrivé à une certaine perfection.
In reaching a certain amount of perfection.
Telle qu'on peut penser.
Such that one might think.
Que le parlant a détruit cette perfection.
Sound picture destroyed that perfection.
Je veux dire qu'il y a eu de nouveau beaucoup de médiocrité.
Oh, I mean to say that again, a lot of mediocrity
I
came in.
Or of course, immediately.
Oui, immédiatement.
It still sustains to this day.
Et jusqu'à ce jour, c'est vrai.
Because to me, as I've said to you earlier this morning, so many of the films made today. Are photographs of people talking.
Des photographies de gens qui parlent.
C'est ça. Oui, oui.